The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
If you eat, sleep, and breathe golf...
Sounds like my kind of guy.
...love to explore...
All right, here's what you do. You're going to call your PR guy on the phone and tell him I'm here to see him.
Then most importantly, just want to have some fun...
Looks like we got ourselves an orgy here.
Well, welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren.
Don't you think this is starting to get just a little big for the two of us to handle?
Here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence.
I don't know how much you know about journalism, but... First rule of thumb is don't ever ask a question that you don't want an answer to.
And the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Not his fault. He's just trying not to lose his job.
Welcome to not just a special edition, but to a very special edition, all in caps, of Talking Golf Getaways. I'm Mitch Lawrence, along with my pals Darren Bunch, who's out in sunny California, and Chris McEwen, who, as we record this, is in frozen, snowbound Chicago. He is, for this podcast, as we say in the biz, behind the glass, producing. And it's a good thing he's behind the glass, Darren, because if he was outside, he'd be frozen stiff and of no use to us. So we're happy that he's in there taking care of business. Great to be with you as we share some time with the only Guinness World Record holder we have ever had on the podcast, Darren.
Well, that's saying something, too.
Well, the one and now the literal only Patrick Koenig is going to join us in a minute.
Beautiful.
Unbelievable.
I can't wait.
Really.
I can't wait until I spent some time with Patrick on the tour. Just a brief flashing moment that I got to spend on the tour. And I can't wait to hear all about it wide variety of stories I'm sure he is going to tell us today.
He probably has a few. Before we get to that, thanks for joining us wherever you get your podcasts or on the Great Golf News Net platform, including GNN Radio 24/7 Golf at its best. You can find Darren, as always, at Golf Getaways on Twitter X. Nah, Twitter. I'm not going X, ever. On Twitter and Instagram, Chris at Chris McEwen on Twitter and Instagram. And, of course, at Range Heroes on Instagram. Fantastic. That Range Life podcast, Bill Bush, it's all great. Let us get to this because I know for a while now, both Darren and I and a whole bunch of you out there, hopefully, have been following along as Patrick has done his thing. And it is quite a thing, as we're going to get to. In 2019, this is what's amazing. In 2019, episode 131 of Talking Golf Getaways, Darren and I welcomed Patrick to the pod to talk about what we'll now call the RGV Tour 1.0. At the time, it was just the RGV Tour. Patrick had done something in 2018 that seemed totally mind-boggling to those of us who thought playing golf for a week straight on a trip was a big deal, which is pretty much anyone who plays the game. So Patrick ditched his job, bought an RV, having never driven one before, drove around through 48 states, played 405 18-hole courses in a year. Obviously, at least to me, that was just Patrick in training mode. Because you cut to 2023 and the RGV Tour 2.0. New RV upgrade, new plan to do something no one had ever done before. Old world record for 18-hole courses in 365 days was 449 courses. On October 2023, and I can't be sure of the exact date, Patrick, I'm sure it's burned into Patrick's mind, he broke that 13-year-old record at the Omni Interlochen Golf Club outside Denver, Colorado. Rear view mirror time, as he still had time left in the year, for a new and ridiculously profound world record. Hit the gas hard. On January 2nd of 2024, he putted out in the rain on the 18th at Chambers Bay, site of the 2015 U.S. Open in Washington State, did his now famous high kick in front of friends and world record hangers-on, and celebrated shattering the record, and shattering is also capitalized, having completed 580 18-hole rounds in 365 days. Now, much has been written about Patrick along the way. You can find that online, and you should. There's a lot of great stuff. The Wall Street, these are my favorite. The Wall Street Journal called him the hero maniac, which is, if I were Patrick, that's what I want on my gravestone. On our first Talking Golf Getaways pod with Patrick in 2019, Darren called him insane. And I know he meant that in the most respectful way. No matter what anyone calls him, there's one thing that's indisputable. Patrick J. Koenig has played more 18-hole golf courses in 365 days than any other human being ever in the history of golf. Don't take our word for it. Just ask Marie at the Guinness World Records office. I don't know if there's a Marie there. It just sounds romantic to me. Certified stamped alone, one of one. And importantly, he's one of one as a human being, too, which you will find out more about now. You can find everything you need to know about it all a few places. Twitter, at Patrick J. Koenig. That's K-O-E-N-I-G. On Instagram, PJ Koenig. And on his fabulous website, pjkoenig.com. Completely fitting to do a special edition of Talking Golf Getaways here. Welcome back, Patrick.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. That was far and away the finest introduction that I'd ever received. I got goosebumps. I was like, who is this guy? He sounds pretty awesome. And then it's me. And so hats off. That was a fantastic welcome. And well, thanks for having me on the show, guys. You nailed that intro.
Well, thanks. As I said, you're worthy. You're worthy. I had to up my game for you now. That's all. So, and I know, Darren, you know, the two of us, when it came time to say, because we've cut back on the number of podcasts, and as you were getting closer to finishing your 365 days, and I kept following along and seeing where you were, and I literally just thought to myself, we got to talk to him about it. We just have to, because and I know you've done a bunch of stuff around the world record. But for Darren and I, I was kind of kidding around, but this is literally worthy of a special edition, because the feat itself on so many levels is worthy of it. You agree, Darren?
I definitely agree. I have a question, though, before we really dive into all the stuff that we're going to do. Something you said, Mitch, that I never had thought about. Patrick, who held the record before? Like, were you aware of who had the record?
Yeah. So in that first tour that you guys talked about, I had no idea. I was just trying to play the lower 48 and see golf courses and have a good time. And I was just kind of going along at my own pace. And then somewhere towards the end, somebody mentioned, hey, the world record for most 18-hole golf courses is 449. And, you know, I'd done around 400. Not all of those original 405 were 18 hole courses, but I was like, wow, if I actually tried to do this, I definitely could break this record. I was born to own this little slice of history. And so that kind of stuck with me after the first tour. It's a couple golf nuts up in Canada. Jonathan and Kathy Weaver had it for 13 years. And I had not heard from them. I think I sent them a message at the beginning, I hadn't heard from them until I holed out on the 18th hole. They at Chambers Bay, Jonathan gave me a call and congratulated me, and you know, he recognized my feat. And then we chatted about, you know, shared experiences, both doing it in an RV, and kind of, he did it a little different than, or they did it a little bit different than I did. Obviously mine was, 30% more aggressive, but we shared the same sort of spirit. So that was a cool conversation to chat with them, and they were just, you know, gracious and happy that, you know, they'd held it for a time and happy to pass along the torch. Really, really, really nice. I just spoke with Jonathan, but I can imagine his wife shares the sentiment. So that was cool. That was a cool conversation to have.
So that kind of the first question I think both Darren and I and probably a lot of people have as this kind of comes up is, you know, I mentioned before you'd done and you said 405 courses, 48 states. Was it when somebody said to you what the world record was that the motivation for actually really not just kind of thinking about it, but really getting into it and saying, not only can I do it, but I'm going to do it. Is that when it started?
I thought about changing my thing and making a run at that record. But I'd already had a goal of playing lower 48 states and it was, the tour was nearly over. I think I would have had to hustle, really pick it up to get there. And so it didn't really feel right to change and pivot and just kind of do that. And so, it really just kind of lingered. I'm going to do this. But maybe a couple months before the tour started becoming a reality, I put down a business plan for the RGV Tour 2.0. And I put in there the main purpose of the tour would be to break the world record. So it's like, it's a great hook. It's a great story. It's a great goal. So I put that all down just as kind of like let's get this on paper and will it out there and see what comes of it. And oddly enough, about a month later, after I wrote that business plan down, a company called Golf Gamebook called me up and we were just kind of brainstorming ideas of way they could break into the American market. It's a tournament and golf scorecard GPS with some social mixed in. It's an app that's had a lot of success in the UK and they're a Finnish company. And so overseas they were big, but they didn't have a strong presence in the US market. So they were talking to me of ways to do it. And Timu, who I worked with most of the time there, mentioned, hey, you ever thought about doing a second tour? And I told him about my idea and the idea started popping off left and right. And after that first call, I was like, this is probably going to happen, which is a crazy thing to think of, such a massive endeavor. Just one phone call with, at the time, total strangers. But it was such a good call that we were, it seemed like a real possibility. And sure enough, a couple months later, we had bought an RGV and wrapped it. And we were planning the 2023 year in terms of never ending tee times. And that's the story of how that kind of came to be, from me just having it in his idea to having it be my sole purpose for an entire year.
How, if I could just go back for a sec, cause it's fascinating to me, they're a Finnish company, mm-hmm. Golf Gamebook. And how was the connection made? Did Timo call you?
Yeah. They had, I don't remember exactly where it came from, but social media or the internet or through my website, I'm not exactly sure.
Okay, so they had seen what you had done kind of before.
Yeah. Team would follow along. And if you followed that first tour, I think everybody loved it. And it was kind of fun and maybe more of a novel idea in 2018. Obviously, I'm not the first person to think of, you know, getting in an RV and playing golf, but there's certainly been some interesting ideas along that line since I'd done so. And so, that was the first one. And people loved that initial tour. I loved them both, but the first one was special because it was so new.
Yep. All right. So let's, there's so many places that need to be attacked in this discussion. It's hard to know. I'm going to have to try to throw a butterfly net over this stuff. Darren, I think you feel the same way. I'm going to start off by just saying, just asking about the actual Guinness part of this, because the world record was the motivation, for going and to really committing, as you said, to the year. Can you explain to us, since I know, can't speak for everybody, but I know Darren and I have never tried to set a Guinness World Record, although Darren tried to break the Yum Yums Eaten in St. Andrews record once, but he didn't get close. He only had like 30 in 10 minutes. The process of the Guinness part of this, can you talk a little about that? In other words, did you notify them at the beginning? Did you talk to them?
Yeah, so that's that's an interesting story and a wrinkle in the process. That so the folks over at Guinness are, I would say, disorganized at best in terms of. So when I originally reached out to them, I think the fee to get the criteria was $800, which was kind of off-putting. I thought you could just get the criteria, and it took them about 6 months to give me that. And then they sent over a contract, which is where we decided that this we were not going to invite Guinness to be a part of this record. So they had some things in there. There was a fee for licensing that was pretty high. It was unclear if they wanted some. I think they suggested hiring somebody to come along. And so that was would have been challenging because I don't think Shinnecock Hills is going to let the Guinness guy walk along with me. And then the part that was kind of unacceptable was they also wanted exclusive rights to the photography and videography. So they were looking to cash in. And that was a little unsettling. So I have yet to go back to him. So what we did is we took the criteria for the record. And we followed that to a T and basically set the record. And okay. I'm not sure if I'm going to go back to them and even seek that thing because we do have everything that they need in order to establish that as a record. But there's some things that I don't know if they're going to want money or if they're going to want the rights to the photography, which they just won't get. I mean, as a professional golf course photographer, I think you guys have an idea of how much how much value is there. And so I can't give that up. So,
if I had known all this, I never would have even mentioned their name on this podcast.
Yeah. That's the thing. I usually skirt around it. And because it's kind of the thing that's kind of gross about the whole thing. Everybody else was really cool. And it was really fun. And, so we just said, hey, and then what happens is when you start talking about that and you start asking other people, the guy that holds the record for most golf played is not, it's not recognized by Guinness either. And so what is kind of a shame is that we don't have a legitimate and, you know, they're obviously looking to make some money. Right. And they have a monopoly in the space. So nobody is competing with them for these world records. And it's such a brand name that, you know, like you said, you say, hey, Guinness world record, you just assume it's a Guinness world record. Yeah. But, you know, so there's the world records and then the folks that want to tell it to Guinness. And from my perspective, you know, I was like, hey, we can tell this story on our own. We don't need Guinness to do whatever they do and add whatever their perceived value is. It's like, let's just rock and roll with our own way. And obviously we've got GPS and every single hole, every single score from every golf course is kept in that app. And so, you know, if you wanted to pull up the GPS score, you can see me walking every single hole and putting in a score. And then I've got pictures from every single place. So I don't know what else somebody would need from a verification standpoint. So it was just more of a standpoint if we did not want to give them some of the things they were looking to capitalize on this record.
Like I said, I'm done with Guinness. Just the world records. I'm still going to drink Guinness, but I won't ever look at the word the same though.
Yeah, it's interesting when you get into there and everybody's experience. I've had some people, the older ones, it was a little more, you know, people say, oh, I just sent my scorecards and that was good. And I was like, well, that's not what they asked from me. And I think the inclusion of a company like Golf Gamebook and then other people that did it through a corporation changes the way that they approach it a bit. I mean, I don't want to get into the speculation of what their business model is, but when a corporation is involved, I think that they, people can see, they see dollar signs, you know?
Yeah. All right. Let's get away from what didn't happen as far as a world record to everything that did happen. In terms of a world record, go the full circle. You finished up at, well, no, I take that back. Let's go back toward the beginning. You set this goal, then you say, okay, here we go, and you decide to take off. How can you go back there and kind of try to remember what you were feeling at that point? I know it's a year later and so much has happened, but to me, Darren and I talk about this all the time. The excitement of an upcoming golf trip is fantastic. You know, for weeks in advance, you're kind of chomping at the bit. Given what you were about to do, I can't even imagine all the feelings that you were going through.
Yeah, it's almost too much to kind of understand what I was getting into at the beginning. I knew I'd done it before, and I was like, kind of like, here we go. And I remember, you know, all my focus really at the beginning was the kickoff event. So we're trying to get people there, and, you know, it's January 3rd and you know, tough people, some people are canceling. So I'm like kind of really trying to focus on what that kickoff event was going to be. But I remember distinctly after we did the kickoff shot, which was really fun. Everybody threw water balloons at me as I hit the very first tee ball. and you can go to Instagram and see that. And that was the kickoff of the tour. But then things kind of settled down and you have to play the round of golf. And I remember sending on the second tee box there at Monarch Beach Golf Links is where we kicked it off and thinking, man, I'm playing golf just for the next year. This is every day. That's what I'm doing. I'm playing golf now from here until there's just as far as I can see, I'm golfing. This is it now. I'm thinking, oh, that's fun. I mean, it's going to be an interesting journey. And so that kind of hit me on the second tee box and I was excited and happy, but I'll tell you what happens kind of as I settled into it, you know, you do the math and you say, we roughly have to play nine courses a week to get to the record. And so that's kind of where you say, all right, let's start out at that pace, see what we can do and do as many 36 days as possible. You know, do 36 a day, that's 14. You know, you say, okay, if I could do that, that puts me in well above the pace. And so I just started kind of hammering those days out. And it really became quickly the main focus. I thought maybe there'd be more focus on like the social media or the photography or, you know, it was the record. The record was the main goal. And that stayed consistent throughout the entire year. And the reason that it was so, I was so driven and focused on it was, I think it was the best goal that I'd ever had. You know, it was time driven. It was trackable. It was challenging. It was on something that I love to do. And it was measurable on a daily, hourly basis. You know, it was so I would never really left the forefront of my mind. And something that I heard. So along the way, you know, there are these kind of little things that kind of give you that trackable progress on your goal, whether it's the ending of a round in the Golf Gamebook app, whether it's hanging a ball mark up on my wall in my inside of my RGV, all those things represented a reduction of space between me and my goal. And I use that term, the reduction of space. I heard it on a podcast somewhere because what that does from a goal setting perspective is when you have your existing state in your goal state. And then when there's a reduction of that space in between there, you get a little bit of that dopamine. The endorphins are released. It makes you feel good. And so you're driven, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I like that. I liked how that made me feel. Let's do that again. And so every little bit, there's this little bit of release of success and a reduction of space. And, you know, that's what that represented to me. And so I had that, you know, throughout every single day for a full year. And then it just kind of becomes about the day and about doing what's required that day. And I check my progress every once in a while and run the math. And as I got closer, you know, there was times where I was on pace to do almost 600. Most of the time it was between 550 and 600, depending on, you know, what heater I was on, or if I had taken a couple of breaks or whatever that was, you know. So
are you, I'm sorry. I was. Are you booking all the golf as well? Yeah. I mean, there's the component of this where you're playing all the golf, but I don't think people recognize how much has to go into. I mean, when we talk about just trying to book a private club, like you mentioned Shinnecock a minute ago, you know, it would take me days just to try to figure out how to get on Shinnecock, yeah. And you're doing this weeks in advance. I know you had Tobacco Road set up, you know, 6 months in advance or something like that, the initial conversation. So talk about that process too, of how that just, one, is a time suck, but is also just a mammoth kind of undertaking in this.
Yeah, that's one of the most challenging parts is just doing all of the different things. I mean, there's five jobs that are included in this RV tour, right? So there's the golfer that does the golf. There's the driver, which drives everywhere. That's a big job. There's the social media and content portion of this entire thing. There's the photography and the videography, and then there's the route coordination and event planning part of this. That's five different things. And so you could have one person do each of those and it would be a full-time job. I did all five of those myself. Nobody drove that bus besides me. And from times I would get a couple days help with people planning, but I still had to, figure out who that was going to do that. And somebody would plan a day or something like that for me. But I said, okay, here's the day. Can you book the tee times or something like that? And that was never ending. That was once I got to the end of the schedule and it was all done, I was so happy because it really is, you play and enjoy it. But, you say you play 3 days in a row and you play 36 and then you got six tee times and you better get six more tee times in the future. Otherwise you're going to be coming down to like, I don't know what I'm doing in a week. And that really makes it difficult for other people to plan if you don't know where you're going to be and to give people heads up. And so what I did, obviously, you mentioned Tobacco Road, Shinnecock Hills, or these things that are really big and important to me. I would put them as like a beacon and then plan out around it, reach out to the people that reached out, wanted to be a part of the tour. I said, all right, I'm going to be in North Carolina for these dates. You want to play Forest Creek on Tuesday, And so then the emails go out to the people that have reached out, wanted to be a part of it in that particular area. I tried to stay 2 weeks out on tee times. I was pretty good. It did get down. Sometimes somebody cancels the day before. I mean, you know how it is. Things happen and life happens. And at private clubs, it's not just a tee time that I can show up at. So other people need to be involved in that. And you want to be sensitive to their schedules as well. And so you're kind of getting the idea of how it was always something going down and I'm booking tee times while I'm playing, which, can be exciting because you get great tee times. That's a thrill, right? When you realize that there was a tee time at Shinnecock Hills or is a tee time at Sand Hills, or, you found a way onto to Whippoorwill. You're stoked. You're like, oh yes, that's when I was eyeballing and now it's going to happen. We got it, And so it's kind of these little victories as you go along and get some of these private courses and get tee times that fit perfectly into the schedule. And then there's the ones where it all falls apart. I mean, towards the end, around the holidays, I think I had 9 days in a row where everybody canceled, which was insane.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's like the people were dying. I didn't know them, but there were a lot of deaths in the family. I was like, this is a, so I had to be quick and replan. And sometimes great things happen from that. So you got to learn to embrace the chaos, when the plan goes awry, when the adventure begins. And if you embrace that sort of mindset, then it's more fun. You're just kind of, oh, well, here we go again. Let's see what happens from this one.
It sounds like trust is a big word here in the whole process.
Yeah.
You may have a goal at the beginning, but the amount of trust in whatever is going on is fabulous to me. I can't explain it. It's almost like you when you just said about plans being canceled or weather or different things that come up, the fact that you're going okay, that's to me, it's just so many lessons along the way.
Yeah, you kind of get things that you have in your stable that you can count on. And it's like, it was never that hard just to get a public tee time. If all hell breaks loose and everything gets canceled, we could either fire up just Golf Now or ask somebody else to help out. And it was always kind of like I could book a last second tee time as a single and get my rounds in for the day.
Right.
I could usually rely on Walmart to allow me to park in their parking lot, or there's almost always a place to sleep, or, And so there's kind of these things that you've got your go-tos. You ask the golf course that you're at, can you sleep in the parking lot that night? So there's these things that you realize are go-to options, and that makes you kind of have a more stable track, and it gives you a little bit of reliability.
Right.
But you're kind of in the unknown every single day. You know, there's a bit of that element. And then it takes a while to get comfortable with that. You know, you don't know where you're going to park tonight. Well, that's okay. It's not even a concern, you know, until it gets, you know, 10, 11 o'clock and you need
and you don't have a place to park.
You mentioned the idea of creating these beacons and then kind of planning around. And I know you put out the word to people, you know, wherever you're going, hey, I'm going to be here. What I'm fascinated by in this process, and I experienced this obviously firsthand at Tobacco Road when a plate is part of your group there,
yeah,
is that not only were you getting local people though, but you had friends coming from all over the country. I mean, the day I played with you, you know, Taylor Cole came from Tahoe. Joey and Evan both came from the West Coast. Gina came from L.A. And then you had, you know, a guy who I can't remember the kid's name who was with us, who was from the area, who came up to play. And I'm fascinated by one. Do you have a count on the number of playing partners you had throughout this whole thing? And just the idea of so many people embracing this, not just where you are, but coming long distances just to be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was really cool to have people do that. And so the Tobacco Road was a bit of planning. The part that was an event we were looking to get people to come. And we had about a dozen local people show up. And we learned a lesson that day is that if you set up an event and take registrations, but don't charge them, that people will not show up. Because we had about a dozen people that confirmed, and then none of them showed up because we didn't take their money when they wanted to register, which we changed for the finale and ended up getting about 70 people to sell out Chambers Bay. So we changed our approach. And part of that is because I'm just one guy, right? Because I planned that event all on my own. And my bandwidth was just too little to be doing stuff like that when you're playing 36 holes a day and doing the social media. And so the cool part was, though, that I had those folks that, you know, were part of it and supported it. And my buddy Joey the Cat came out for that. And not, and, you know, that wasn't the only time that he came. He was my chief snack officer for a good stretch. You know, he came out and he brought some fantastic snacks I'd even never even heard of. You know, we ate those up and we golfed our hearts out. And so Joey's was a great part of this tour. And he mentioned Taylor came out for the kickoff as well, and then she was there for the event. So with people like that that are part of it, make it really, really fun and special. It makes it feel like I loved, you know, I mean, it really makes a difference when you've got people that would come along. Most importantly was my girlfriend. People are like, you had a girlfriend this entire time? And I, that's one of the number one things they say is the wives, when their husbands tell them about it, is like, well, certainly you can't be married. And I'm not married, but I had Rachel was just special. You know, she would come out from time to time. She'd bring cakes and she'd get candles with a number. So it'd be like 250 or 310 or whatever it was.
Nice.
And we'd celebrate those little milestones with cake. And I think she ended up like a dozen or something cakes over the course of the tour. And that's just kind of who she is. And so to have that support makes it way more fun. There was not one time that I felt lonely out there, because it was always a new group of people, maybe strangers. And then I always had something to look forward to, you know, a week out. There were times where I had my, you know, my buddy Ben came out, then my sister came out, then Rachel came out, like just dropping one off, picking up another one. And those were fun stretches. So other people get experience a little bit of what I'm going through and enjoy that as a vacation. And then they go back to normal life and I keep on golfing like a fool.
So you had a girlfriend and you had all these people, plus you had opening up a new position, a CSO, the chief snack officer.
Yeah.
You might want to look into that one.
I need that job.
This, while you're talking about this, I'm thinking this is why all of us who love the game, which is think of all the other world records in athletics. Most of them are pursued either solitarily or with a big team being a part of it, I would think. This is the great thing is you had a solitary goal, one goal. to break that record. But in the process of doing that, all this peripheral joy comes along with it because of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Such I mean, the great, thing is, it's a great thing.
It's neat about it is the golf's special like that. Right. And so all these, and you asked earlier how many people joined. I think I averaged a threesome, maybe a little less than that per round. So, you know, we're looking at about 1,500 people are a part of this world record in one small way or another. And that's a cool thing to bring those people along. And, you know, they're not setting the world record themselves, but they look at that world record and say, I was a part of that. And they were, you know, they were absolutely, they helped set up tee times. And that's, I can't thank those folks enough for making, because without them, this record isn't as fun. It maybe happens. It's definitely not as interesting. And I wouldn't be as overjoyed with the end result had we not had those 1,500 folks join. And some of them are total complete strangers. Didn't know who I was. I get on the tee. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I know I got this little thing in my back pocket that can either some people kind of like, oh, maybe some people didn't get it. Other people, they think I was joking, and then they'd see the, you know, they get the, I tell them and they'd be like, that's the coolest thing. And then by the end, they're like, they see the RV. They're like, oh, this is the greatest thing of all time. They're taking pictures and I'm signing autographs, and they're donating to the first tee. We raised $40,000 for people just donating. You know, a lot of those are totally from our strangers I'd never met before, just want to be a part of it. And small donations, you know, it's $40 here and $20 here. And so that there was a magic in the tour. And my favorite saying is that the RGV tour was better in real life than it was on social media. So whatever you may have seen from afar, just know that it was better in real life. And that's a rarity, because most people put up the highlight reel, and the highlight reel was the real life show. You know, it was so cool to be a part of this, and the people that joined, 100% of them would agree.
I can attest to that in real life. I wanted to ask you one more thing on this idea of the five different jobs that you did, because I think there's a sixth job that you maybe didn't mention. And I again got to witness this firsthand when you were at Tobacco Road, but somebody had to be the mechanic for that damn RV.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, yeah, you had nothing but problems. And for all these guys, all of us who have had problems with a vehicle on a golf trip, and I think most of us probably have at one time or another, I mean, it's nothing compared to the craziness that you had to go through. And I'm wondering, did you just want to light that thing on fire at the end of this thing and be done with it? Or does it keep a special place?
There was one time where it peaked for me in terms of madness. And so I was at, I don't know where it was. It was some place in Texas. I was in a parking lot, and I had the jack stabilization had malfunctioned, and the RV was up on jack, so not able to drive because it was elevated and the jacks broke while they were up. So I missed a tee time. And in order to get a mechanic out there, which was fortunate that I even got one that day, to get those jacks, he had to manually override them and put them back up. And so then I'm like, all right, we can go to the next tee time. And then as I walk back out, the stairs come out. And as I stepped on the stairs ripped right off. They fell right off. right after I'd fixed one thing, another thing had broke. And so fortunately, I was able to tie those things up underneath the bus and make it to a tee time that day. I did miss one. I wasn't able to go to Houston, I think it was. And so I missed a tee time. But then, you know, that next course, I had somebody coming to fix the RV while I was playing. I think I was up to like midnight while they were working on the stairs, and a host of other things went wrong. But I mean, everything from the electrical system to the stabilization jacks to the door, the water system on that thing was broken. Like the awning was broken in parts that I didn't even know. The light on the outside was broken until about October. I didn't even know there was one there. I mean, everything in there that I could possibly think of went broke. It all broke right at the beginning because it was hastily constructed by Forest River with the desire just to move product. And they were just, you know, it was extremely frustrating to spend the majority of my time fixing something. This is a brand new RV. I was like, we bought this brand new, so we wouldn't have to deal with these sort of things that usually happen after a year or two. And it was comical in a sense, the number of things that broke. But I will say this, once I kind of got used to the things that were breaking, and they all kind of did at the beginning, and so we kind of knew what was wrong, and I managed with them, until the summer, and then the summer the AC broke, and I came to the and if people have an RV, it probably originated from the Northwest Indiana area where most of the RVs are built and made, and that's where the Forest River headquarters was. And so when I reached that point in time, I think it was somewhere around September, I pulled up to their thing and I gave them a list of 30 things that were wrong with the RV. And I told them, hey, I'm going to go play 36 holes of golf. If you guys can just fix the air conditioning, I'll consider it a win. But here's 30 other things that are wrong with this. And to their credit, they got a team of like 16 guys on this thing, did about a month's worth of service work that they should have really done before they tried to sell it. But they fixed everything. And then I came back and all the stuff was fixed, and stuff that I didn't know was broken was also fixed, except for one thing they never did was they fixed the every time it rains, it just a river flowed through the center of that thing. It wasn't waterproof. So,
oh, no.
Wait a minute. Every time it rained, a river ran through the actual RV inside?
Yeah. They didn't bother to properly seal the top of the RV in just their haste. And I think they attempted, but just didn't do it. And so it would rain, then you just wait for the pooling to begin. It would come under the first slide out, and then you drive, and then the little water would go all over the place. And I got good at it with like the towels and knowing where it would come based on the angle of where the RV was leaning. And so I just dealt with it, because it was like, I don't have time to pull this thing into a water bay and have somebody go over and check it. And that was the only thing that never got fixed. And then the water in the toilet was never operational. They fixed it and it broke a week later, and I was like, whatever, you know, you just kind of like, there's a lot of whatever, you just say, it's not going to stop us, let's go, you know, it's still,
oh man,
we're still functioning.
I applaud you for staying. I mean, I got to experience it with the air conditioner not running in the middle of a Carolina summer, and obviously Mitch knows what those are like too, because he's in South Carolina. But and I just, when I stepped in, and I was like, the heat is oppressive in that thing. Like, it would have been better to sleep outside under the stars, it felt like. And so the fact that you were in it that long with the air conditioner out is just, I think you should get bonus points. Like, you should get to add 100 courses to this record just for doing that and surviving.
That was almost comical, the way that it happened. So it was like, on that same day, so there's three ways you can cool that off. There's an AC in the front, which isn't very good, but it's driven by the coach, right? The car has an AC built into it, and that, you know, you get a little bit of cool air through there. And then there's electric fans that will pull the heat out of the top. And those are very effective, especially at night when you can pull in some of the cool air from the outside. And then there's two air conditioning units on the top. And those are all the things, that cool that RV off. And every single one of those broke on the exact same day. I was like, oh, the fans are broken. The air conditioning, both air conditioning units are broken. And the completely unrelated, the freaking AC in the front's broken. So when I'm driving to the next golf course, I'm sweating like a pig in 100-degree oven until I get there. And you pour out into the golf course. You're like, thank God it's 90 degrees out here, because it feels like 60, you know? And
I was looking at because the RV, apart from these mechanical problems, what you did inside and what it represented about the tour is incredible. It's like a museum, literally a museum of the trip. So I'm picturing you in this lap of luxury RV driving around the country, and just kind of, I don't know, somebody in there waving palm fronds and feeding you grapes while you're going from one course to another. And it sounds like it was something different.
Well, it was somewhere in between there. Cause you know, once we got the fix, the last 3-4 months were pretty nice, you know, when everything was kind of operating how it would be. And then the museum was really coming to life. And that was my favorite thing to do. And kind of like a little side journey is every course I'd go into, I'd, I'm like here for your ball marks is what I'd say. And I'd snatch some ball marks or other little trinkets that I thought would display well in the RV. And by the end, every square foot of that place was covered. And it was really something. I loved showing that thing off. People that would come in would just be amazed, especially if you were a golf nerd. You know, I had guys that would sit in there and they'd read the walls for hours. I mean, you literally, there's 500 things on there and every one of them is a story. And so you could spend days in there telling stories and going down memory lane. And that was what was fun, you know, to have that little, that made the tour that much more special. It was a visual representation of where we'd been. And it's hard to, you know, you can say, hey, I played 500 courses, but then people are like, cool. What does that mean? I can't wrap my head around that. But then when they see it represented in the RV, it becomes a little bit more, you know, fathomable. You understand a little bit the scope of the thing. And so that was just a spectacular way to share the history with the people that joined, you know.
I want to ask, you're talking about the stuff inside, so I want to mention quickly one thing that I Darren got to be at Tobacco Road with you. I didn't get to see you along the journey, but we do have one thing in common, which is a love of Belvedere up in Michigan.
Yes.
Because I did see somewhere in just kind of researching and doing some stuff that the pin flag from Belvedere was your favorite souvenir. Mm-hmm. And there's a good reason for it. I just thought, oh, isn't that cool? Because I played in the U.S. Hickory Open up at Belvedere a couple summers ago. And you know I wasn't really familiar with it until I started getting ready for the Open. And then when I got up there, I just flipped out. Okay, this is great.
It's but a golden age gem.
Yeah. Didn't it have to do with you finishing off the top 100?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's this little beauty there that doesn't get much love. And I think it sneaks onto the top 100 public list. And it's somewhere in the 90s. I think it should be higher. But it was the night before I was playing there at Belvedere, and I knew it was on the top 100 public list. And I was like, you know what? I hadn't really focused on that list, but I kept track. And so I thought, probably someplace close to being done. I knew I was close, and that was one that was remaining. And so I went on the night before and went down that list one by one, and everyone I'd played. And then I got to Belvedere, and it was the final one on the list. And I was like, tomorrow I'm going to do it. I'm going to complete this list. Top 100 public golf courses in America. It was the current list when I got there, because, you know, these things change and somebody moves in tomorrow that wasn't on there and either you have right. or you haven't played them. So it's difficult to do it. But so I played there and I drained it was a little 5-footer for par. The 18th hole is kind of tough. And somebody honked at me while I was trying to make the putt, you know, how cars drive by and try to razz you. But I couldn't be razzed. I made that putt for par and shot like a, I don't know, 78 or something, and gave off a little high kick. And they have these cool pin flags, one of the coolest ones. And they actually use them out on the golf course, too. They're a little fabric, and they're triangular, and they got the B. And I'm looking at it right now. It's got a little wooden stay. I hung it up in my my golf den here in my home. And I took one of those pin flags from the pro shop to commemorate my little achievement there. That's some of the first kind of 100, you know, top whatever lists that I've completed. And so that was a cool thing to add that to things I did this year or past year.
That's so cool. Yeah, that's awesome. Let's talk about golf a little bit more, about the courses. My biggest question in this is not all the big high profile courses, obviously, but what do you think is the most obscure golf course? You know, maybe the place that nobody knows about that you played on this tour.
Yeah. Well, no, I've told it to 1,000 people at this point. So I'm doing my best. I always say that Blackjack's Crossing owes me a nice check for the amount of just word of mouth that I've done for these guys. And I had not heard of Blackjack's Crossing before. And I don't know if you guys have,
or maybe it's me.
So Blackjack's Crossing is about, it's like, it's a short 7-hour drive west of San Antonio.
Okay.
So that's the reason that it's not more well known or more photographed or played, is because it's not easy to get to. And I probably wouldn't have made the journey had I not been in an RV. But I was sitting in Tucson, Arizona. I remember I was on the toilet just looking at stuff. And somebody sent me a picture of this, of Blackjack's Crossing. And it, you know, I've taken enough photos, I know one of course has got something. And I saw it and I was like, how have I not heard of this place? It looks spectacular. And so I checked out where it was. I was like, oh, I get it. And I was like, well, if there's ever a time to go play this place, it's now. And Arizona was not far away from Texas. And so I immediately rerouted my thing to get out there. And I was glad that I did. I mean, it was one of my favorite journeys. Rachel was with me during the time. And so we cruised on down to this place called Terlingua, Texas. It's this great little town that people are living in, like out in teepees in the middle of nowhere. And there's these shops and everybody goes to this bar, this one bar in the town at night and you know, drinks and hangs out, and they got live music. And it's just a special place. I mean, if you know West Texas, it's completely different than the rest of America. It's weird, you know, and if you haven't been, it's a place to go see and experience. And there's a golf course out there. It's a Lanny Watkins design, but I don't think Lanny designed it. You think he put his name on it? I don't know who built it, but they did a hell of a job putting together something special and just some marvelous terrain. I mean, the land is it's kind of like, people are familiar with Wolf Creek. It's similar in terms of kind of just the views and the drama, but it's not as, I don't know, Mickey Mouse or is adventure golf as Wolf Creek is. And there's some really good holes there. There's a hot springs that, like a natural hot springs that flows in front of one of these greens and just stuff like that. That's like no homes out there. And it was fun to just be like, I'm exploring like something special. And there's not many of those places left in America with the internet age. If there's something cool, somebody took a picture and put it on Instagram at this point. And so to find that was really cool. And I think anybody that's listening to this and goes and experiences that place, you're going to love it. You know, it's I'm not saying that it's going to take down the Shinnecock Hills or the Sand Hills in terms of the golf course itself, but it was a lot of fun to go and visit that place. And that's probably the most obscure, you know.
Hey, Patrick, I'm going to interrupt you because I'm looking at pictures on the phone that you took of this place. Holy crap. I mean, yeah, I get exactly what you're talking about. That looks really unbelievable.
Yeah. You think a place that dramatic, I mean, it's built to be on a postcard that would entice people to come. I think they have an airport there that people with means can fly into, but it's not going to be cheap or, you know, time effective to get out there.
Do they have lodging there?
They do. There's a little resort that you can come in and stay, you know. So
only because it looks like the kind of place, like some of these other places that we've been to, that you want to go. The course is dramatic enough and fun enough that you want to go and spend 3, 4, 5 days, even just playing the same course over and over again and having fun.
Yeah, it's one of those places you want to play it again. It's not tricked up where you're like, it's kind of a one trick pony. It's like, no, this will be fun to play again. I want to try that again. Definitely. It's a good mark of a course is when you're done, how badly do you want to go around again? And that was a strong desire to do that. Obviously, I move on this type of tour. But some courses you're done and you're like, that's good. Next, you know, but not Blackjack's Crossing. Yeah, real. And I caught it just on a perfect day too. It was like not too hot. I got a sunset and I was just thrilled that it worked out for me. That was a special, special spot. I had a little pin flag I put up in the front of my RV for the entire duration of the tour. So I was always thinking of it.
We kind of keep going back and forth, but I want to make sure there's a few things we cover before we let you go. You mentioned earlier about the $40,000 raised for the First Tee of Seattle. The first RGV tour, you had raised 20. And I remember when we were talking about it on the podcast, you had said that 20 1,000, I think it was allowed 200 kids to play golf for a year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean,
does that sound familiar?
It does, and there's different ways of measuring that. But what it does is it invests in the future of golf and potentially provides a kid that little extra exposure that they wouldn't have. And if they get a little bit of the experience that I've had, I mean, golf changed my life, and it's made it so much more enjoyable, and I've been able to touch more people and reach more. It's like I just feel like I'm doing my part for humanity, and it's just that's massive. It's as big as a thing as I can do in this world, you know, in terms of I talk about my life as a whole, you know, and it's been rewarding from that aspect. So what the attempt is there is to give the opportunity to achieve a portion of that to kids that might not have that opportunity. And whether that's through providing additional range time, additional instructors, or just helping an organization like the First Tee reach out to more kids and be more effective at what they do. And you know, that's the idea. We raised money for, I think, 3 or 4 chapters across the country this time, not just greater Seattle. And then we did things like the National Links Trust. We raised some money for those guys, who they're going to build 4 new courses in the DC area, which is a place that's very passionate about their golf. And a lot of great kids that go to that course every single day. And they don't, you know, that's probably the only place that they can afford to or realistically play every day, are some of those courses out there. And so you make those courses a little nicer and a little more special. They can enjoy golf on another level and learn about what's possible. You know, and that's a cool thing. And then we did some stuff for the Southern California Golf Foundation. So here at home, the folks over at Monarch Beach and Eric Lohman and those guys do a great job of running that foundation and just investing in the future of golf. And so that was the idea, is to give back. And that became really powerful for me in terms of, I'd never done anything like that before. Always too selfish in my motivations. And when you kind of, you look to doing something like that, it becomes very rewarding. And I didn't really see that until I tacked it on as kind of like, this would be easy to do, you know, this is kind of a cool thing we could do. Why not? And then it became more of a passion, and we'll continue to do stuff like that. We'll do the First Tee in North Florida this year. I know Golf Gamebook is doing the play day with Len Matisse, where they raise a bunch of money for the First Tee out there in North Florida, where there's a ton of kids interested in the game and a really flourishing chapter. And so we'll continue to do fun stuff like that. It's kind of changed my perspective on what it means to be in golf, right? It's about giving back too.
Well, I think obviously it's fantastic. I love the idea that First Tee of Seattle benefited obviously on both tours, but the local charities as you pass through, people benefited that way too. And I don't think there's anything better. I really don't. So good on you for doing all of it. And I love the fact that as people joined the tour, like you said before, they could donate $5 or $10 or $20 and in that small way be a part of exactly what you were just talking about.
Yeah. And the idea was that we got a bunch of swag, whether it be everything from head covers to like keychains or bag tags and or drinkware. We had some great cups from the Seriously Ice Cold. People donated those. And you know, they keep your drinks nice and warm. And people will send me a picture of them drinking their coffee out of one of those things. There was even some from the first tour that people would remember, and they'd send me, you know, that was 5-6 years ago, and they still got that mug and they're drinking out of it, or, you know, things like that. And then they get a little bit of, you know, people, golfers love to do that, right? We all take trinkets or ball marks or pin flags or something from a place we've been. But to give them something from the tour, I think golfers are like that. We love our souvenirs.
Yeah. Well, I know there's a ton of people out there that are happy to have them. I guess this is the final, I feel like we could talk for another couple hours and still not get to everything, but I guess the big final question is, what's next? Have you thought about it at all, or are you just going, I need to chill for a while?
No, I'm going to drive that bus off a cliff. set it on fire and drive it in and you know, make a viral reel out of that for sure. But no, we won't do that. It's too valuable. We have taken all the swag out of it. And I'm actually, after this, I'm hanging up and taking it to have the decals removed, which is kind of the decommissioning of the RGV. But it has it's completed its purpose in my life. And hopefully it moves on to another family for some RV fun down the road. You know, what's next is golf course photography. I mean, that was, I took pictures of every course and I love doing it. I love chasing the sunlight and capturing the magic moments that exist on golf courses. And that's my job as a professional golf course photographer. And I never lost sight of that and did it every single day. And hopefully it raised my profile so I can get the opportunity to come out to other golf courses and or come back for a photo shoot and help people showcase their golf courses, which is I'm always surprised when golf courses have this $1 million asset and they're not broadcasting it on a daily basis with new and creative photography. It just seems like, I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Like, why are you even mowing the, you know? so that's kind of my role in golf to do that. And I'll shoot some events and I'm available for any sort of photography. And then I pair that with a fun sort of social media so people can get the photography as well as a taste of the experience. And I'm writing a book. I've got a book that will be written. It'll be
There you go.
It will be.
Is it about the tour? Was it about breaking the record?
It'll be about one and two. We'll blend the first one in there because there's some great stories from the first tour as well. But the idea is the breaking of the record. That's the storyline. But it will be it'll be a great book to get on your coffee table because it's going to be filled with my favorite photos from both tours and so eye candy if nothing else. You could flip through it and be like, wow, this is really cool. It could be a photo book, but you'll have the story in there. It'll tell you about the characters. It'll tell you about myself and how I've grown and learned and failed and then ultimately achieve that record. And still left some things on the table, like a hole in one, which didn't happen. Spoiler alert for the book. I don't make a hole in one, but that's to be documented. I was certain it was going to have a fairy tale. I mean, it would have been a fairy tale ending if I'd have made a hole in one on the very final round is that I predicted from the very beginning. Didn't happen. Otherwise I probably would have had a stroke and died. So that's probably a good.
Well, it leaves you something to still attack. That's all.
Yeah. The story goes on. I hunt down the ace hunt continues, and that's okay because it's more about the journey, right? And the journey continues. If I were to make an ace, then I'd just be a guy with one hole in one. I got something to go forward to, but plenty of things to do post tour, traveling and golf course photography, and then writing and putting this together when they find the time to do so.
Well, I'm pre-ordering my copy right now.
Awesome.
Well, I think I'm the first one to actually pre-order.
So. Yeah, I'll send you an invoice. It's an expensive book. I didn't tell you.
That's fine. I don't care. I truly don't care. I think you should call it Reduction of Space.
Yeah, there's one. I might just go with the recreational golf vehicle. I think that gives the people the idea. But we'll be talking about Reduction of Space. That hit home with me. And that was that whole goal made this year just a real pleasure. And so
that is fantastic. It's one of the great things I've heard recently. So thanks for that.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, I listened to Tony Robbins talking about it and he's in a lot of the things that he said were very much in line with my goal setting. I was like, I nailed this. This is as good as a goal as one can ever have in life. And it was so satisfying. It's one of the most rewarding things that human beings can do is to set a goal like that and work towards achieving it. And then bringing in people to support them and stuff. It just gives people a purpose, a mission. And, it allows you to be full in life. It allows you to be satisfied and allows you to live. And that's what I did for the past year. So it was a pleasure.
Wow. I don't know how you could find a better close than that, Darren. that's pretty good. Darren's Absolutely. Knocked out. He's blown away. He has no words.
Yeah, it was. That's it. I mean, that's kind of the mic drop right there. Is that that I lived. You know, people talk about life and what you need to do in it. And a lot of people are focused on, you know, the amassment of money and things that maybe don't really satisfy your soul. And this was something that satisfied my soul, and I think it satisfied those that were in its sphere, you know, around it. It was satisfying to those people too. So I feel like I did my part. And the hardest thing will be, you know, finding the chapter that holds the candle to this year. And I think it'll be okay. But in that regard, it holds a real special spot in my life and my history. And it really begins to define who you are as a person. There's ways to change and sculpt and realize where you come up short and doing something that's out of your comfort zone and a little more ridiculous. This is obviously, some of this is still in my comfort zone, having done it before. So you can always get more ridiculous, but, another lesson that I love to share, because it's really true, is, the impact that it had on how I view the world around me changed as well. Because if you're like most of us in a day job and you turn up any sort of screen, it's not pretty. You know, you look at wars and horrible things that are happening, and the news tends to focus on the stuff that gets clicks, which is usually not great stuff. And I did very little of that this year. When I was in front of a screen, it was to share what I was doing. I was creating. I wasn't consuming that much. And I was around people that were in their best. I got the best of people. I got their generous side. I got their excited states. I got happiness. And I got that every single day from people. And it's hard to look at people and think of the bad things when all you see is the good. So, you know, there's good and bad to everybody. And I was just bathing in the positive side of people for a full year. And so you start to, it changes your lens, and you realize what people are capable of, what we have in common is far greater than the differences. And you focus on that, you look at humanity with like a hope and a satisfaction that we're doing something right here, versus a lens that other people took. And I was happy to be on the RGV tour side of things this year.
Well, one big thing that stands out to me is that is all true completely. But you were a focal point. You were in the center of that. And the light that you brought to everything is what drew those moths to your flame.
Yeah,
and
well, thanks,
I think you
got
to pat yourself on your shoulder for it. You're a pretty incredible human. And I really mean that. That's not blowing smoke. That's just listening to everything you say and what you did. And bravo, man. What a year.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you. I mean, those are great compliments, and I try to, I love to hear that sort of stuff, because we always tend to look at our shortcomings, and I think that it's cool to hear that I had that effect on people. So thank you.
You did. The only shortcoming that I saw the entire year was whatever that Christmas costume was.
No, that was. I mean, those were short shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. On purpose. Oh, good Lord. Yeah, the shorts were originally like, you know, a little more respectable for an elf costume. But I turned, you know, Christmas morning into sexy times when I rolled those shorts up and showed some major thigh. People were not ready for that in Christmas morning, but
it wasn't, and I wasn't. I know you. I've seen you
either.
I've seen you do some crazy stuff, and I went, "Wait a minute, what?"
Yeah, that was a good one. And my favorite part of that was that we had enough time, because I golfed early in the morning. That was Christmas morning, and my sister had seen that, and so we took a screen grab or a picture from that, and she was able to print out a photo of me in my little elf costume and put it in a frame that we had bought for my mother for Christmas morning. So when she got that picture of me as that little ridiculous elf for her Christmas, which was very satisfying.
How cool. All right. Well, this has just been pretty unbelievable. I knew it would be. I know Darren did too. And thanks for spending some time, man. You can obviously, I'm hoping you come back because there's still, we have more to talk about. We'll get to it along the way. Everybody out there, you can find Patrick, and you should, Twitter, at Patrick J. Koenig, on Instagram, at PJ Koenig, on his great website. And he was talking about his golf course photography. You can find all of it there. And you really should. It's fantastic. PJKoenig.com. Darren, it's been fun, man. We don't do it that often, but when we do and we have somebody like PJ on, this is a pleasure.
Well, the guests make everything we do better, obviously. If it were just me and you, nobody would be listening, Mitch.
Brilliant. Deep. As expected. All right. Well, thanks again, PJ, and all the best. All the best with the writing and everything else. And we will see you down the road somewhere. Darren, I'll talk to you. I had a thought, and I think about this almost every day because in my golf office at home, I'm looking at it now. I have a postcard that's on the wall that I've had for probably 30 years. And it's from Ashworth Golf and the great John Ashworth. Came up with a marketing line that literally I think might be the best marketing line about golf ever. And the line is, it's on the front of the postcard. It says, "The course never leaves you." And I can't tell you how many times that's reverberated in my head. And when it comes to Patrick Koenig, he's got enough courses to never leave him for probably 50 lifetimes. I mean, it's just an amazing accomplishment, and so happy we got to talk about it. And congrats again to the world record holder. Yippee.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on. This is a fun conversation. I'd say more fun than most. So don't sell yourself short. That intro, I'm still thinking about how great that intro was. We'll have to get parts of that, you know, transferred over to LinkedIn. I'll get more leads because that is spectacular.
All right. Well, I'm here for you. You've given us so much for so long now. So I'm happy to be able to do something for you, man. We always close this show with Tom Petty and Running Down a Dream. Patrick obviously didn't just run it down. He caught it. He ran right over it. And now he stands literally alone on the mountaintop of a world record accomplishment. We hope you can chase your dream, plant your own flag too. So long.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.